One weekend, when I was about 9 years old, I went hiking with my brothers and my dad, following our favorite creek, but going beyond the little, burbling spring where we usually stopped to drink and turn around. We were in the rolling hills of northeast Kansas, where the less soil, powdery as pastry flour, had settled into deep drifts in prehistoric times, eventually getting carved into winding valleys by the rivulets that made their way down to the river bottoms of the Wolf River or the Missouri River. We worked our way upstream, clambering along the muddy banks, sometimes weaving through thick groves of dogwood or stepping into open glades where tall oaks and walnuts soared overhead. After a while, all that was left of the so-called creek was a murky dribble, but that's when we came upon a huge, leaning sycamore that commanded our attention. It was a magnificent tree, with a mottled trunk the width of a couch and grand limbs that stretched 40 feet to each side. It hovered over the narrowed stream bed, and best of all, the slope of the trunk made it seem like a living ramp. "Come on up," it begged. Since I got there first, I started a cautious attempt to climb, straddling the huge trunk. However, I lost strength 6 feet up and had to slide back down. John, 3 years older than me, took his turn too, trying to tightrope walk slowly up the incline, but he lost his balance. And when our little brother failed, Dad broke in. "All right, lads, step aside. Time for the old man to show you how it's done." To our surprise, he walked away from the tree instead of towards it. Then he turned and arched backward, chest extended, arms out as if to say, "Behold!" And he took a galloping start, mounting that impressive incline in 5 huge steps. Our father was a big man with a top-heavy torso. His pant cuffs flapped, his keys jangled, but he was a sight to see, so large up there and not stopping. Even though he had to lean into the air to keep himself moving, he reached the 12-foot mark, where a perpendicular limb shot up like a staff. Then he paused to catch his breath and grin. We gaped back, impressed by this elevated version of our father, glimmering like a statue on its pedestal. He held on to the vertical branch in front of him, weighing his options. He could come down now, having proved himself, or he could reach for even more glory. "Dad," I cautioned, guessing what he had in mind, but that goaded him into further action. He leaned away from the vertical branch, gathering resolve, then lunged around it, putting his foot to the other side. He had not lunged enough, though, so he was stuck with 1 foot on the lower side of the branch, 1 foot on the higher, and all his top-heavy bulk tilting into space. Too late, he realized that this thin vertical branch was dead. With a loud crack, it snapped away, and he had only enough time to squat, throwing his arms around the trunk of the sycamore as he rolled to one side. For a second, Dad's big, sturdy legs scrabbled for a hold, and it looked as though he might stop the fall, righting himself. Then he continued to slip around the huge, slanted trunk, like a rider slipping under a bull. All nobility disappeared. He was a cartoon caricature, suspended by arms and legs, and because the trunk was simply too wide to grasp, he could not hold on for long. He dropped, flat out, back first, from 12 feet up, which meant he was unable to see what lay below and unable to protect anything vital. He fell so quickly and heavily that we were stunned by the sound as much as the sight. With a deep whump, the heft of his body hit the trickle of creek water and lifted a muddy geyser. The thump was so hard the ground trembled. Paralyzed, we stared at our now inert father, who was not moving a limb, his head nestled in a cup of mud. When we ran toward him in panic, I was wondering, would he still be alive? And if he was, would he be a cripple the rest of his life, like the star football player in town who had stepped off a roof accidentally? He lifted a hand to keep us away, which seemed like a good sign, but he didn't say a word, which was bad. "Are you okay?" we whispered, and he didn't answer, maybe having broken the apparatus that made speech possible. Carefully, ponderously, he twisted himself onto his side and lay a while, apparently trying to remember how to breathe. He attempted another movement, this time placing his hands in the mud and hoisting himself into a bowing, half-kneeling position. "Are you okay?" we asked again, and still he didn't answer. At last he stumbled to his feet, leaning over, shaking his head, but not as if answering our question. When he looked up at the tree, he seemed amazed, like a man stepping out of a grave. Then he lowered his head, shoulders trembling. He looked as if he might be crying, which caused us to stare at each other in horror. But no, Dad was laughing, laughing a breathy laugh that went on and on. Half relieved, half afraid, we laughed along, looking at each other to make sure it was okay. When he turned towards us at last, he was grinning. "So, boys, that's how it's done." Half a century has passed since that warm spring day on the creek in Kansas, and I have raised two of my own sons now, but I think I finally understand what my father meant. Indeed, that's how it's done, boys. That's exactly how it's done.